Blue Roadie and their classic Diamond Mine, and that was off the album the same name. That was the Toronto band's second album, and that was released in 1989. And then it was new music from Queens of the Stone Age. We heard Time and Place, and that was from their album In Times New Roman, and that was released in 2023. And just wanted to say they're here Friday, April the 5th. Should be a great show. And then the song you just heard was Jason Isbell with Middle of the Morning, and that was from his fantastic album Weather Veins, which was released in 2023, and it was the band's ninth album. Got one more song to go. It's a gentleman that's going to be here in the summer, so I hope you enjoyed. I'm glad that you listened to my show today. The show's called At Large. I'm here most Wednesdays, and have a great week.
Cinnamon girl, I can be happy the rest of my life with a cinnamon girl. A dreamer of pictures, I run in the night. You see us together chasing the moonlight, my cinnamon girl.
The UMSU Service Center is your one-stop shop for all the information on campus. If you've got questions about the university or UMSU, the UMSU Service Center is the spot to get all the information you seek. We've got the 411 on university-related matters, referrals, and directions to office locations, and more. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of UMSU University Center. Call us at 204-474-8211 or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.
Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Catherine Bruce, a contemporary Winnipeg artist who works with mixed media, capturing cityscapes and landscapes in vibrant abstract compositions. Catherine was born in New York into an artistic family. Her father, Robert Bruce, was a successful artist and professor at the University of Manitoba. At a young age, Catherine and her family moved to Winnipeg, where she later completed her fine arts degree at the University of Manitoba, then studied painting and sculpture at the Boston Museum School of Fine Arts. She worked as a potter for many years, traveled widely, lived in New York, Mexico, and has taught and shown her work extensively in many solo and group exhibitions in places such as New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York. In Manitoba, Catherine's work may be found in many public spaces, such as the Winnipeg City Hall, Winnipeg Hydro Building, and many other government buildings around the province. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Susan, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate the opportunity to just share ideas.
Thank you. You've had a very successful career experimenting with a wide array of media, innovatively capturing cityscapes and landscapes in dynamic rhythmic compositions. Can you introduce us to a few of your works and what elements have inspired their spontaneous improvisations?
I think when I first moved back to Winnipeg, which was in the late 90s, I moved into a small studio in the Art Space building down in the Exchange. And at that point, I'd been living in the States for 20 years. I was back now in Winnipeg. I had this little studio. I kind of didn't know what to do. And I'm sitting there in that studio. And then one day, I just started feeling the energy of New York. I had taken lots of photos of New York, and I had walked the streets a lot. I just started drawing, and I was drawing New York in a very kind of abstract black and white, just using charcoal. And I had never, in all the years I lived down there, I had never even considered drawing that city. But here I am now in Winnipeg in this little studio, and that's all that could come out of me. And I'm just like doing drawing after drawing. And that really, that was kind of the beginning of me doing cityscapes. I did a mentorship through MAWA with Eleanor Bond, who is a great teacher. She encouraged me to go bigger. And through that year of working with her and the MAWA program, I started doing large abstract work. I hadn't before really used acrylic paint that much, but I started using acrylics, and that kind of let me play a bit more than if I had been using oils or something. And it was just a freedom that started coming in my work, and this love of New York, big city, and I was feeling that there in my little studio, and it was great fun for me. You know, I want the viewer of any of my work to feel the life and energy that I'm feeling. And I hope my work does that. And my work, when I'm working on it, it is spontaneous. And I don't really know from one painting to the next what I'm going to produce. Even when I'm working on a piece, I don't envision it ahead of time. And there are often surprises to me. And I realize my gift to the viewer is look for surprises in my work. Look long enough until you see something that you didn't see in the beginning or that kind of thing.
With those revelations, you've also explored many exciting ways to naturally mix the media and techniques that you use. Can you tell us about your creative journey and what you discovered over the course of your training and your practice?
I guess my creative career started with me doing pottery. I had had an interest in it from when I was really small. And one day when I was actually crossing Osborne and River Avenue, I met a guy walking across the street, and he turned out he was a potter. And he said, "Oh, you should come to my studio," which I did. And I just felt like this is it. This is it. And started working in that studio. And from there, I went to the University of Manitoba and did my fine arts degree because I wanted to be a potter. I wanted to work with clay. I think I even realized then how important just doing something with my hands was really important. So that was kind of the first material to work with. And then I moved later. I did a lot of printmaking. I spent a number of years working in handmade paper. As all along, sort of throughout this little journey, I'm drawing and doing some painting. Although painting in the early days was not my thing. The mediums that I put my hands in directly, I think, were more important. But then once I was back in Winnipeg in the 90s, and I was doing more just drawing and painting, what I had been learning through paper making and clay work was my love of texture and building layers. And I think all of that kind of plays into what I do now.
And with the paper making, the texture building, and the layers, you developed unique techniques. And what are some of the themes and subjects that you like to work with?
Well, I'm influenced by my environment a lot. And I realized that when I moved into that studio in Winnipeg and I moved from it to another, to another, to another, I had different views of downtown buildings. I love architecture and I love the old buildings and all the details in them. And that was causing me, bringing forth my desire to draw and paint these buildings. And cityscapes are important. I'm living out in the country in Manitoba now, and I realize how my love of the Canadian prairies means a lot to me. And so I'm as happy drawing just a simple landscape that represents these prairies as I am sitting in a big city.
Well, you certainly bring together a lot of natural elements like color and line and texture in your compositions.
I started going to Mexico 6-7 years ago now, and a little bit maybe before I started going there, my colors were brightening up. But since going to Mexico, my colors have changed a lot in my painting, and they're much brighter. And I love drawing, and I love line. Whether I'm using paint or I'm actually just doing a drawing, I love, you know, working into something with line. And the printmaking part of me, even if it's a painting, I love it when I can add and subtract. I can print onto my painting using another piece of paper with paint on it. It's an add and subtract. It's a play of layers in the work. I collage into these things, whether it's paper, my paint on canvas. There's a play of material. I make them up, you know, most of the time. I had this griddle, an electric griddle, that I plugged in one day, and I started, and I put my paper on it, and then I took a chunk of wax. I had always been interested in encaustic, but I've never done encaustic, so this was my take on how to get wax to melt. I just took my wax, and I started melting it onto the paper that got hot from the griddle, and so the wax started to melt, and I was using it like a huge crayon and moving it around the paper so the wax would melt into the paper just in the areas that I wanted it to. And so some areas were wax, some weren't. And then I could draw in with graphite and charcoal or crayons, and the graphite would melt. And I love how all those things just sort of play with each other. And then they cause me to respond, because I never know what's going to happen when I do these things. I'm always experimenting and just trying to play, I think, with new things. And if I find new materials, I go like, oh, what can I do with those? I'm starting to do sculpture more. And I did some welding last year, which I'm hoping to do a lot more of. So that's just sort of another material, another medium that'll be kind of fun to explore with.
Are there any other artists or music that is important in your process?
When I go into my studio, I love the quietness of it, but I also realize often that I do want music. And depending on what I'm working on, I will have loud, jazzy music or rock and roll, doing a large abstract painting. I love The Traveling Wilburys is one of my favorite CDs. Roy Orbison, Elton John. I was married to a jazz musician for many years, and so I've listened to a lot of jazz, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite music, but I realized that it's a big part of me, and I learned a lot from it, and the whole concept of improvising and improvising in my work. And the specialness that these musicians have in being able to listen to each other and never knowing ahead of time what was going to be coming necessarily, but listening and responding. I feel that's what I do most of the time with my work. I'm intuitively listening, quietly listening, and then responding. So because I've been living in Mexico trying to learn Spanish, a couple of years ago I became aware of a woman from the Canary Islands originally. Her name is Rosanna, and she's a singer. I probably have all of her CDs. And last year, that's all I listened to. So she's kind of a mixture of jazzy, rock, and very energetic. And I love her. And so that's big influence for me. She helps me to stay loose and happy. And I'm listening to Spanish while I'm, you know, working. It's fun.
Do any of your titles come from your experimentation with Spanish? Do you have something coming up that might reflect that influence?
Well, I have a show in Killarney, Manitoba in September that's called Gallos y Pollos, and that literally just means roosters and chickens. And it's going to be a solo show of all my chicken paintings, which in the last few years people have come to know about. And I've actually rarely shown them, so my inventory of chickens and roosters keeps growing. And so this will be my first opportunity to actually have a show of most of them. So that's at the Killarney Arts Center in September, and that'll be fun.
Is there a certain significance to these animals in the Mexican culture that have inspired the title or inspired some of the works?
Well, I've been drawing chickens for years. I just find them kind of an interesting shape to draw, I think. And going to Mexico, certainly there are lots of chickens and roosters all around, and you hear the roosters crowing even in the cities. So, and I've come to love the Spanish language, and a lot of my paintings now are taking on Spanish titles because of that. And if I've done the paintings down there, I feel that they deserve a Spanish title. So a lot of the chickens that'll be in this show are ones that I did in Mexico. I'll probably have a subtitle called Chickens and Roosters.
Sounds exciting. And your father was an acclaimed artist and teacher, and you've also taught art a great deal. Where have you taught, and what has been most rewarding about teaching?
I love sharing when I have taught. I haven't taught on any regular basis, but pretty much everything I've done, I've taught workshops. Years ago, I taught pottery. I taught papermaking workshops for a number of years. I developed a video actually on how to do papermaking. A few years ago, I had this concept kind of pop into my head, which is a workshop now that I continually offer called Kick-Ass Energy Art. And it's just about how to get people in touch with their own intuitive energy and how to just be loose and enjoy new things in their life at the same time as doing a bit of painting and drawing. And it's been the most rewarding teaching this kick-ass energy art because it really has helped change people's lives. And that to me is very exciting. I haven't been teaching it a lot, but two or three to four times a year maybe now I offer a workshop in that.
Are there any other events you're working on that you'd like to share with our audience?
Besides the show that's coming up in September, I'm going to be part of a group show. I'm a member of a group of women artists all around the Brandon area called Drawn Together, and we are reading Prairie Women Writers, and we are going to each choose an author and then do works, sort of our own interpretation of the book that we read, and put together a group show that we hope will maybe travel around Manitoba. That'll be something in the next year maybe, or 2 years.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to actually challenging myself enough to do it and then see how the whole group responds to it.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for being on our show and sharing your story and insight with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Oh, thank you so very much. And it's lovely to talk with you.
Thank you. That was contemporary artist Catherine Bruce speaking with us from Homefield, Manitoba. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is UK artist Lauren Mealy, born in France, raised in the UK, and trained at the Art Institute of Boston in the US, where she graduated with her Bachelor of Fine Arts. Lauren then studied art history at Sotheby's Institute of Art in London and graduated with her Master's in Contemporary Art. She works from her studio in London and has exhibited widely, recently at the Art Rooms Roma in Rome, also in the Saatchi's other art fair in London. In the fall, she had her work included in the Vienna Calling event at the Gallery Art Pool in Vienna. She's also had work at the London Art Fair, the Scottish Arts Club in Edinburgh, and more. She's been commissioned for public artwork, such as her new Concordia Wharf mural in London, and been involved in collective exhibits, such as the International WITP Collective Exhibition in Amsterdam, hosted by ArtCan. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
You've had the opportunity to study fine arts and studio program at the University in Boston, as well as art history and contemporary art at Sotheby's Institute of Art in London. Can you tell us about your training and related experiences since graduating and how this has informed your practice?
Sure. My undergraduate program in Boston, I was classically trained there. And then Sotheby's Institute of Art in London was focused more on contemporary art history and theory. So the two actually complemented each other quite well, both kind of on the opposite ends of the contemporary art and traditional applied art spectrum. And they both really sort of, I've taken a lot from each of those courses and put them together in my current practice. So I have a very gestural representational style of painting, but I am also thinking about contemporary issues as well in my work.
You have an exciting portfolio of various intriguing concepts and engaging narrative compositions and vibrant colors and dynamic rhythmic movements. As your narratives unfold, can you share a little about your creative process and what makes your painting so innovative and sets you apart?
Sure. First of all, thank you. I love to have that feedback about the color and the innovation. I start with being quite introspective about what I'm sort of dealing with in my everyday life and how it sort of affects my mental energy. And that's sort of where I start. I then sort of work from memory because I feel like there's a vibrancy in working from something that is so internalized, especially when you're putting it out into the world. So there's an instability and unreliability in using memory. So that sort of informs what direction I am going to move in as far as putting paint to canvas. And my process from there is sort of I look at other artists who inspire me and other imagery that's relevant to what I'm working towards, and I sort of put together a composition that I feel is not only relevant in those respects, but also successful as far as balance and color and conversation goes within the painting.
And who would you say some of the artists that have stood out for you over the years are that might have been part of that influence and inspiration?
Sure. Lisa Yuskovich is one painter. She paints mainly the female form in an exaggerated fashion. She actually studied under another artist whose work I enjoyed looking at until I found hers, called John Curran. And I also look at work by Jenny Saville because of the way she handles the figure and the texture she sort of pulls out of the female form and skin. It's just really gritty and really, really present. And I really like that about her work. And then there are a couple of other artists who I look at from time to time as well, but those are two main influences in my work today.
So you've been working on your Siren series and exploring dialogues and portrayals of women that engage the viewer in somewhat seductive narratives. How did this series evolve, and did it come from some of the other artists you've mentioned?
Yeah, so thus my current series, the Siren series, is very much informed by the idea of feminism, but more importantly, the idea that feminism doesn't have to be an abrasive concept, that it can actually be very feminine. And it's often that those two terms are at the opposite ends of the spectrum, which I feel is a little bit problematic, because I feel like they should go hand in hand, really, and not feel so separate. The Siren series that I'm working on, the imagery is mainly derived from glamour magazines such as Playboy and other types of those kinds of publications that are a little bit kind of objectifying women. And I have found it interesting to sort of pull out those figures and isolate them. It recontextualizes them, and it sort of gives off this seductive narrative, but in a more sort of 60s, 50s pin-up throwback kind of revival, which I think is interesting because it sort of does indicate how timeless the female form is. And then also with the prefix siren, you're looking at mythological history anyway, whereby it implies that this form, this woman, is not only beautiful and seductive, but also in a position of power and potentially slightly dangerous. So I think that all of those points brought together create an interesting conversation alongside this image of something that is quite beautiful and quite feminine, but also has a bit of lust to it as well.
And you've had this, some of the series in various exhibits and events. Can you tell us about those and maybe some of the other ones you've been involved in?
Sure. So the Siren series is fairly new. I've been working on it for probably about a year now, and that was born out of my previous work. There was sort of a transition there where I was looking a lot at myself as a reference for the imagery I was creating. So there has been sort of my work has evolved into this Siren series, and each time they're exhibited, I get feedback about the direction that I'm taking, and I learn more and more about myself and my practice as I exhibit more broadly. The most recent exhibition at the Saatchi Other Art Fair in London was really interesting because that was the first time that I had several of the sirens exhibited together in one place. And actually seeing, I think, 6 or 8 paintings next to each other, it actually is almost a little bit, it can be really quite provocative and a little bit intimidating for the viewers to come and be surrounded by these very in-your-face and quite seductive women. So that was interesting. And then some of my previous exhibitions, a lot of them have been in group shows. I do a lot of work with a couple of different collectives, so it's also interesting to see the paintings next to some work by other people who are working with similar themes but have a different way of expressing them. So it is actually really interesting taking the work out of the studio, and depending on how and where you're exhibiting them, the different kinds of conversations that can come up internally and externally.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the collectives that you've been involved in and how they've been beneficial to your art practice and keeping you connected?
Sure, yeah. They've been a really valuable part of my practice for the past couple of years. I really appreciate a lot of the communities that I work in, and I feel like, especially in a city like London, that's just so competitive, it's actually really great to feel like your allies are other artists, even though you are kind of in direct competition with each other in a way. One of the collectives I'm involved with is called ArtCam, And that's a pretty broad network of artists who are not only based in London, but also throughout the UK. We have some in Europe and some in the States. And actually, I think a couple in Australia now. But that's really interesting because we get together a couple of times a year. There are several exhibition opportunities within the collective. And you sort of take turns curating the exhibitions. You can get as involved or not as you would like. And it's a very collaborative collective. And everybody sort of works together. And there's a lovely network of people who are involved with that. And the idea is really sort of to support each other, not only in creating work, but also how to market your work, what sort of strategy you should be looking at over, you know, a 6-month period. So it can be really helpful and a great support. So that's ArtCan. And then I'm involved with another collective called The Tunnel, which is, I'd say, a little bit more community driven. It's much smaller, and there's a handful of about 20 artists, and we actively seek exhibition spaces, alternative exhibition spaces to show our work, whether that's an old church, we showed in an old delicatessen, which was really interesting. And we get together once a week and, you know, discuss exhibition themes. We usually use literature as a basis to depart from, and it's a different vibe and a different sort of point of engagement. But each collective really does, they're both really valuable in their own ways, and it's really nice to have this connection with these different groups of people, and there is crossover, and the support is amazing. So I definitely value the friendships and connections that I've made through those.
You have mentioned in an interview before that you're an artist full-time at heart, part-time in reality, and based on some of the challenges of supporting yourself as an artist, what would you advise new artists and how to persist, and maybe a few tips on marketing their art?
Sure, yeah, it's a really good question that I continue to find answers for myself. I'd say that one of the keys to sort of making it work is persistence and flexibility. Persistence probably being the first and foremost. I have had a slew of different part-time jobs over the past several years, you know, and a lot of trial and error to see what works well with my practice, but I've always put that first and foremost. So if something else isn't working, that's the part of my life that will actually be sacrificed. It'll never be the art making. So in that respect, you have to be really selfish. So that, I'd say, is really important. Self-marketing is an absolute must today. It's funny because it's not something that older generations of artists necessarily had to deal with, but today there's no way around it. So a social media presence is crucial. And just making it a part of your practice, think of it as like a visual diary, which is actually a healthy thing to have in your practice anyway. Yeah, I mean, I think just a lot of persistence and a lot of, at the beginning, a lot of bravery. it totally pays off.
What was one of the more exciting and adventurous commissions that you've worked on or have coming up?
Sure. So I'd say probably my most exciting commission that I've done, and which was totally out of my comfort zone, was to do a mural for a roof terrace garden. And there were so many things, there were so many unknowns in this. One was, how do you prepare for a mural? Because you have to inevitably go through a several month period of back and forth with plans, drawings, palettes, ideas with the person who's commissioning the mural. And then I've never made anything quite to the scale that this mural was done. And also, acrylic paint is kind of the foremost medium for doing something outdoors. So there were a lot of elements that were unfamiliar to me. That being said, it was very exciting, and it really paid off. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Luckily, the weather was great for the 4 days that I was working on it, which is really hard to get in London. So that was great. I'd say that the run-up to doing the mural was actually almost the most fun, because I went back and forth with drawings, and it was almost a collaborative process, which is always interesting. That was probably my most exciting, adventurous commission to date. I definitely hope to have some more.
Do you have any other exhibits or events coming up that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. Well, I have an open studio coming up next weekend, which is in London, so it's probably going to be a little far for some of your local listeners.
Maybe a little.
And then I'll potentially be exhibiting in the fall edition of the London Saatchi Other Art Fair.
Nice.
So that will be at the end of October. And then other than that, as you know, Susan, I'm in the middle of moving studios, so I'll probably just have my head down over the summer and be creating new work.
So tell me a little about your new studio.
Sure. So my new studio is actually connected to my home, which is the first for me. I've never worked from home before, but this new setup I have is like a little sort of conservatory off the back end of the property. And I say property, it's not big. It's very small.
Sounds like London.
I know. This is not grand by any means, but it's interesting because it's all glass. So I have a lot of natural light, and it's absolutely going to be an adjustment being able to sort of roll out of bed and into the studio.
Yeah.
So I'm still sort of coming to terms with that. I'm enjoying it so far. The one thing that I think I am going to miss is having the communal aspect, because in the past, my studios have always been in big open plan artist studio warehouses, which, you know, they have their drawbacks, but it's also really nice to have other artists right on your doorstep. So stay tuned, but I have a feeling this one's going to be good too.
Oh, great. I'm really glad to hear that. Well,
yeah.
I'd like to thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing your story and insight. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
No, thank you so much. Thank you.
That was artist Lauren Mealy speaking with us from London, England. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
Yo, this is 3Flexion, and you're listening to 101.5 UMFM in Winnipeg.
Tell me where there's left to go.